My note says, leaving child tied down attached to electricity? Nah, brah.
Nah, brah. You can throw one out there and say, nah, brah.
Nah, brah.
Nah, brah.
Welcome, applauders, to this month's podcast. I'm Jen McQuaid.
I'm Naomi McQuaid.
And I'm Lydia Malcolm, and this is Shocked and Applaud. You know what we're doing because you clicked on the link.
Oh, you guys, can you believe that, one, it's October. You've made it to the latter quarter of this, our year, 2020.
Okay, so I know that, like, all of the crud that we're in is not going to be done and over with in 2021, but we're, like, 3 months left in the year, y'all.
Yeah, I'm super down for 2020 to be over. And I know it's just a meme, but we can ignore 2020 after this.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to acknowledge it. If something fell apart for you, you don't have to, like, explain yourself. If somebody's like, well, what happened to dot, dot, dot? You'd be like, 2020, man, we don't have to discuss it. I got a free pass from this random podcast I listened to.
It was a black hole. Everything just got sucked into it.
It's not that you lost your job. It was 2020. It's not that you were unable to pay your taxes. That's just 2020. It's not that your relationship fell apart. It's 2020. Whatever happened to so-and-so? 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Why is your hair so different?
2020.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd your car break down?
2020.
All right.
Why did you watch Return to Oz?
2020.
To be fair, I would probably call this one of the high points in my year.
Yeah,
simply because this movie is on point in so many ways.
There's a lot to be merited and a lot to also decry in this film, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
This is one of my favorite movies, and Wizard of Oz is my favorite movie.
I know I've seen this before, but I think I added stuff to this film that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. It was released in June 21st, 1985, so you would have been one of like two.
I'd have been two.
2 years old.
I would have been three.
This is definitely a video that was played and played and played in my house.
This wasn't a video that was played and played. It was one of those movies that came out on network television. And I was like, this is kind of scary and a little bit kind of like a horror movie. Am I allowed to watch this?
I don't know if I ever watched it all the way through on TV. Like, I think we turned on Disney because that was the go-to. And I watched most of it,
mm-hmm.
maybe even a few times is a little. But like watching it now, I was like,
Yeah, like the first part was always the most scariest. So I was kind of happy with how things played out and in the end as a kid.
Yeah. It suits a younger audience. It's not too boggy. Like, and you can enjoy it from merits as an adult. And then there are things that were just wild as a kid, you know? Like the things that I think are wild now are not the things that I thought were wild as a kid. Okay, some of them are the same. Some of them stay with you the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably scream about those. We'll probably applaud about those. But this movie is just like, there are parts of it that are very, okay, that's the whole point of this podcast, y'all. It's polarizing. You're either like, yes, or like, no. I'm sorry. I just explained the premise of our podcast on episode, like, what episode is this?
Does this mean we finally know what we're doing?
I would hazard to say that. I don't know if I put that in the universe. The first step towards failure is pretending you know what you're doing.
Season 5, episode 18.
Ooh.
18 total? We've done 18.
18 movies. This is our 18th movie.
Oh my gosh. We've finally become adults.
We'll be able to drink in like 3 episodes.
We're moving to Europe. We can drink now.
In Canada, I think.
Yeah.
We're Canadian citizens. Yeah.
You guys, we're out of Washington State. And and like the myriad of people you knew who drove. That's how they say it in Canada. They drove to Canada to spend their 18th birthday. Okay, so I guess we kind of just went over how we got to this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ready for some Sean facts?
Yeah.
I love me a Sean fact.
All right. Firouza Balk plays Dorothy Gale. This is her first Scream role. You may remember her from such movies as The Craft.
She was devastating in The Craft.
And if you're really into crappy movies, The Island of Dr. Moreau.
I've never seen.
And Adam Sandler's Waterboy. She was the girlfriend.
Like, I've seen it, but I've blocked it. In The Craft, her eyeliner game was on point, though.
Mm-hmm.
Some other actresses that tried out for this, I shouldn't even say actresses, but females that tried out for this because they're not just actresses. Drew Barrymore.
Actress.
Yes. Very much an actress there. Alanis Morissette.
Okay, but could be her doppelganger.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, who's got brunette hair and giant eyeballs?
This film is an unofficial sequel to the 1939 Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer MGM film, The Wizard of Oz. But this is a Disney movie, not an MGM movie. It's also the first Disney movie that has that nice little intro with the castle and the little star that goes over the castle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that the bwah, 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 bwah noise one?
I don't know. Before this, I think they just had Mickey's head with a you know, severed from his body saying, hi, everybody. I don't know.
Okay, so that doesn't sound super accurate, but I'm sure that we'll be able to... Oh, you guys, we're going to introduce... Okay, and if it's not, we can edit this part out because that's what post-production's all about. But we're hoping to introduce a new segment at the end of these three or four parts, depending on how long our recording is. But a new segment called Shock Talk.
Mm-hmm.
Starring our friends of the podcast and certainly our best researcher, Sean Hall, and his wife, Madeline. And they're going to be giving not a review of our podcast, but maybe like the Sean fix that we had hoped that would happen into like somebody coming through behind us and being like, okay, this is something you should know if you've listened to the podcast and enjoyed it. And here's some more facts and here's our opinions. Because they talk about themselves on Facebook as your favorite nerdy couple, and they are quite accurate. So I'm hoping this comes to fruition and this is very prophetic for you, our listening audience, and that it is like as fun as it is to like talk movies with Sean and Madeline.
I legitimately can't wait for this.
Okay, when talking to Sean and Maddie about movies, it's kind of almost on the cusp of inspirational for this podcast because you're only ever like, that part was great and that part sucked and this part is amazing and you should ignore that part and you should know that this part is contextualized by that part and that precedent was blown apart by this thing and that company affected that development. And you're like, oh, they've put a lot more thought about that into this than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's only going to enhance us. So, like, I'm looking forward to it. If you click on us, click on that. It's going to be in the same feed.
Mm-hmm. We're also hoping to have them read off some of the most recent reviews that we've had for the podcast or some DMs that might have been slipped our way. And
they might bring up podcasts that have mentioned us in media, maybe mention podcasts that they enjoy.
Mm-hmm. I am also going to be, I'm going to be pushing out little previews of some of our best friends on the Twitterverse of podcasts. So you'll receive a little intro into some of the people that we've been checking out and listening to as well.
Isn't that when we visit the craft service table?
That is what we did last month, but I'd like to take the craft services table and make it a full-on entree for people who are interested in a little bit more meat in their previews of shows that we have been listening to.
All right, I'm down.
So going back into the Sean facts really quick, I don't want to just, you know, list these all out at the beginning, but we'll kind of pepper these through.
Yeah, yeah.
Return to Oz is based on two novels of Frank L. Baum's library of Oz books. So this is based on The Marvelous Land of Oz, written in 1904, and Ozma of Oz in 1907.
So ancient. Like, guys, 113 years ago, somebody was like, so.
Yeah.
It did for a while hold the record for the longest release of a sequel, and that was taken over by some direct-to-video Bambi sequel in 2006.
Which Disney still holds, so.
Yeah.
They're like, we're going to keep this.
Is this our first Disney film?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Jen, future Jen, when you edit this, put in this part. Why, yes, it is the first Disney film we've ever reviewed. Or, no, our first Disney film was, put it over this audio.
Actually, Naomi, our first Disney-produced or Disney-released film that we reviewed was Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh, yeah. So it's a Ghibli production. It's a Ghibli Studios. So when it originally came out, in Japan under that umbrella. But because of the relationship between Disney and Ghibli, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, fine. Edit out all the other stuff, unless it's really funny. It's not. You know what you got into because you clicked on the thing.
One more tidbit, and then we can, you know, start going into some of the plot. Just a little note on box office. This grossed $11.1 million in the U.S. and had a budget of $28
million. Ooh. That crashed and burned. But Lydia brought up a point earlier that it was mostly about fighting for the copyright overall, right?
Well, I know that MGM specifically has the copyright on the Wizard of Oz. They still have that. But actually, I think that was Jen who brought that up, because you had mentioned that this was Disney's attempt to kind of hold on to the copyright of some of the other books.
Yeah. So Disney owns the copyright on the book releases. And so out of this, we also got Oz the Great and Powerful a few years ago. But this movie was an attempt to keep that copyright. So they were more producing this in the way that somebody was making a Fantastic Four movie years ago that didn't really get anywhere because they just needed it in order to keep that money. But they did have to pay a significant amount of money to use ruby red slippers instead of silver slippers as they are in the book.
Okay, the ruby slippers are iconic, but if you put side by side and had me pick, I'd probably pick silver.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I would want to make sure whichever one was more comfortable.
Right? I mean, like, shoes is shoes. I, of course, this is a woman who got married in, like, sneakers. Like, I tell people every so often, I'm like, I married short, so I never had to wear heels again. Okay. We were watching Nurse Ratched the other day, and all of the nurses had nurse shoes, but with heels. And I was like, that doesn't fly. I'm gonna do that.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys, we start out on a starry night after the shooting star Disney logo, right?
Right.
And then in big, beautiful, scripty green letters, Return to Oz.
Yeah, but it's the camera pans out from a starry window that the more it pans out, the more you realize, oh, this is a reflection in a mirror and the window looks skewed.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's so many like little like this kind of like lets you as the audience know that this is not going to be as straightforward as probably the Wizard of Oz's. And it's going to be just a little bit off kilter in a way. As the camera is panning out, we see a little girl looking out at the reflection of the window through her mirror.
She looks dead-eyed. She looks a bit like a fish to me, not gonna lie.
Yeah, this is Firouza Balk playing Dorothy.
100% more believable than Judy Garland as the little Dorothy character.
I mean, how old was she when she did Wizard of Oz?
17, 18, I think.
Yeah, and like hyped up on coke. Like, she was like, she was wired for sound, and they had a very specific, like, very rigid way they wanted to present her. I got the feeling throughout this entire film that, like, although her name, Firouza.
Yeah.
Firouza throughout the entire film has, although incredible acting chops, she seems like a little girl throughout the entire film. And at no point do I think that they've stretched her too far.
Right. I think her IMDb profile says that she was born in 1974. I may be getting that wrong, but then that would put her at about 11 years old.
Yeah, that seems right.
Also, fun fact, Firouza means turquoise in Farsi.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
She's got the most gorgeous, like, pale. They go between, like, gray and green and blue light. And I don't know if it's just filters that they're trying on her or just the lighting in general, but her eyes are very, they change in facet throughout the entire film, and it's gorgeous.
Yeah. She's like, she reminds me of, and I don't know if this is going to sound bad, but she reminds me of like a very distinguished landmark that every time you drive past her, you always remember her.
Yeah.
Like just the way that her face is, it just, it's like, oh yeah, that's Firouza Balk. Why do I remember that name? Why do I remember her face so well?
I mean, her eyes are very, they're iconic to her face. Like when you watch The Craft and she's got the black eyeliner and you're just like, wow, she's all eyeball and a really sharp lip and like crazy hair in that movie. But but like it's the kind of face that gets in your head with a subtlety.
Right.
So I think that, yeah, you see her and her features aren't startling, but they are like engaging. Mm-hmm. And that lends itself to her craft. Yeah, sorry. But like it lends herself to her acting so very much. Like she's immediately enjoyable and you don't feel like even when she's acting crazy. And I'm sorry, the only thing I can remember is The Craft. But even when she's being unhinged, you're like, oh, this is a person in complete control. And even as a child, even if she's like 11 in this film, like she has a firm grasp over her character. So even as she's laying in bed staring like fish-eyed out at the window, and we finally come to learn more as the scene progresses, you're instantly drawn into her and you're looking to be sympathetic to her. My opinion.
Right. And we see a woman who comes into the room and she starts talking with Dorothy, saying things like, Dorothy, you really got to get to sleep. It's past 1 a.m.
She's holding a hurricane lamp. This is Aunt Em.
Acted by Piper Laurie, who is the mother of Carrie in Carrie.
Right. And they go back and forth. Even Dorothy's like, yeah, I really want to go to sleep, but I can't. And for whatever reason, she just isn't able to go ahead and do this. And then Aunt Em tries to tuck her in, leaves the room.
As she's leaving. Okay, so Uncle Henry is listening at the door.
Mm-hmm.
They cut to him like eavesdropping. And Dorothy goes, I wish I could just put my... Oh, and we pan past Toto at some point, who's a little brown dog instead of a little black dog. And she goes, from the outside, you hear her say over Uncle Henry looking terribly beleaguered. She's like, I wish I could put my head between my paws and go to sleep like Toto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Toto has an acting credit as Tansy. That's the dog's name.
Super cute.
Very adorable. But Aunt Em ends up leaving the room. She and Uncle Henry are talking a little bit, but it's in the other room, so it's muffled.
It's our first stop on exposition
train. Woo, woo.
Honk, honk.
Get out of the train tracks. Wanting to be told by visualizing car, the train is coming.
Yeah. But Dorothy does see a shooting star, and she mentions that to Toto.
What is it with Disney and shooting stars?
I mean, okay.
A dream is a wish. Oh, sorry. That's copyrighted. I don't want Disney coming after me.
Less than 60 seconds and we're providing criticism. It's legally fine. I have a shooting star tattoo. I have like no room to like beleaguer, like, oh, maybe that's the wrong word, but like to like shame on cliches like that. I love a shooting star.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow actually references a star too.
Oh, and isn't there something in this scene where Uncle Henry's looking at a piece of paper?
Yeah.
And he sees the name of Dr. J.B. Worley, treats anything with electricity, man.
Yeah, it's a paper clipping. So he's looked at it before, especially because she's got an appointment the next day. And Aunt Em comes out and it's just like, it's been 6 months. This isn't normal. They're talking at full freaking capacity with the door cracked. So Dorothy hears everything.
Right.
Adults.
And they also exposit the fact that this is a brand new house because the other house went away. And they talk about how they need a mortgage and
maybe two.
Yeah, winter is... Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, that was the next scene. I was skipping ahead. That's Lydia.
Okay. It's the next... No. It's the next morning. And yeah. This is all that they've really communicated, that they're going to seek treatment because she's so traumatized. And, like, here's the thing. You watch Wizard of Oz and you don't think that Dorothy's traumatized at the end. There was all this victory. She ended back home. Like, it was all a dream this whole time. And, you know, like, you don't think, oh, a little 10-year-old girl got traumatized in a tornado and now we're going to have to work through it. And that's the thing about this film, is that we're working through the trauma of children.
Yes.
Which is not okay in terms of, like, children-oriented films, but I think that might be adult perspective in the same way that, like, when kids watch Coraline, they find a really fascinating and engaging story. And when adults watch Coraline, Neil Gaiman's Coraline, mm-hmm. By Laika Studios, when adults watch it, they're like, oh my god, that poor girl. The kids are like, amazing spider lady.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that as a kid, you watch this film and you're like, what a fantastic adventure. And as an adult, you're like, they're going to zap that poor child.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, even watching this as a kid, I was a little bit like getting to that part there. I had some very specific feels about it.
All right. We'll get there. So. We will get there.
But next morning, and Dorothy comes across a chicken, Belina. She says, you need to start laying eggs. Or she's like, oh, did you lay any eggs today? Yeah. And so
there's
she goes,
obvious voice acting over the chicken. It's amazing.
And so Dorothy goes hunting around at some of the, she's like in the barn.
If you don't lay an egg soon, Aunt Em is going to turn you into stew.
And she doesn't find any in the other coops where the other chickens might be.
But Belina is like pecking around the ground, comes across a key. And credit to the animal trainer. Whose name I don't remember, but it's like McColney or something like that. The chicken pecks the key and flings it off screen, and then somebody chucks the key. I mean, just machination style, how it had to have happened. They chuck the key at her. And she's like, oh.
And so she picks up the key and she's like, oh, this is, she like picks at it a little bit.
Grabs a stick and then like she realizes there's holes in it. She like digs out the mud between the holes.
Yeah. And it and she traces her finger around it. O-Z. Oz. Oh, this must be from Oz. And she goes over to Aunt Em and she starts saying things like, oh, this is a key from Oz. See?
It's a key from the old farmhouse. I must have turned it 1,000 times.
I tried it and it didn't work. So,
right?
Yeah. But I mean, Dorothy's still like, you know, kind of like gunning hard for it, you know, in a way that a kid would.
Yes. And the conversation turns. Okay. Aunt Em is the most put upon person in this entire film. Her husband, Uncle Henry, he busted his leg in the, which, you know, didn't happen in the original film. I'm not sure about the book, but like his leg was busted in the 6 months ago, and Dorothy's has sympathy for that. But it's like that leg mended. It mended. Mm-hmm. And so he's obviously having some sort of psychological problem, but like, that's where she talks about, that's where M talks about, you know, we're going to have to get a mortgage. I've never had a mortgage before, and I'm going to have like two. Mm-hmm. And like, your uncle's not working and everything's wrecked. The house isn't finished. Winter is coming and you have to go to the doctor because I need help around here.
Right.
You're supposed to be a help to me. And that's why I was like, this is where my notes go. Medical intervention for child labor.
Yeah. But there's also this part of me that watching back on it now as an adult, there's these clear indications of child imagination that you can't necessarily cling to as an adult. Mm. And we'll come back to it later on.
We come back to it all the time, guys.
But right now, I think it's important for Dorothy's character growth, for everybody listening to know that Dorothy will go ahead and she starts talking about how Oz is this and Oz is that. And there's mention in the scene before about how she goes on about walking tinsmen and talking scarecrows and ruby slippers and all that sort of stuff. And it's like she's not letting go of her experiences at Oz.
Like two scenes from now, right?
In the past scene in the exposition train, Aunt Em talks about how Dorothy's just prattling on about these different things that she's experienced.
Oh, okay.
And so now she has like actual proof that it was something that happened to her, but her aunt is not in a place where she can go ahead and actually recognize like, oh, okay, this is something that did happen, because she's got so much she's so put upon.
Yeah, the adults have an issue with taking something slightly out of the ordinary that a kid might find fascinating and then like dismissing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that has a kid engage with you is to meet them on their level of excitement. I think if you, okay, applauders, this is a public service announcement brought to you by someone who's worked a lot with children. If you want a kid to engage with you, engage with that kid about the thing they're obviously passionate about. Kids wear it on their sleeve all the time. If a kid presents you with a key from a fantastic land, don't dismiss it as an old house key, but like, that's fascinating, you know? And engage, because once something's engaged with, like, you draw somebody out, especially if they've been inverted. Like, she can't sleep, but maybe if she talks out her fantasy, even if it is a fantasy, maybe that's going to help her. You know, I mean, seek medical help when you need it, but like this doesn't seem like that.
Right.
Seems like the key represents confirmation bias to the adults. Like, they think that it's just one more thing that adds into the delusional thoughts that she's having.
That's a valid point.
I don't think they had language like that back then, maybe, if they're shocking people.
Right.
So they go back towards the house after Aunt Em collects all these eggs and it's like, we got to get going. We got to go to your appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And then they load up a buggy. Toto's scratching at the window. Uncle Henry's like, hey, be back before dark. And Dorothy turns around and says, yeah, we will.
Mm-hmm.
The dog somehow manages to push up this window that, like, no, the dog couldn't do that. Like, dogs don't got physics to push up a window. But I'm going to allow it because the dog escapes out of a window. I'll say window four more times. Window, 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 right. Window. And runs after the carriage down their country lane.
Yeah. And when he gets closer to the carriage, Dorothy's just like, no, Toto, you have to stay here. But he obviously doesn't want to stay.
He's like, ow, ow, yeah. Ow, ow.
Oh, he's so adorable.
My notes say, appreciate that yelping. Yeah. Girl, same.
My note was, I'll take you everywhere, Toto.
I would.
Yeah. But I think this is important to know that as far as like storytelling goes, and as a sequel, Dorothy is not taking anybody from the previous movie with her. These are all brand new characters.
Yeah, that's fair. They established in previous scenes that both of her parents are dead. And so like just how small her world is comes into view when they're driving through the next town, which has like four tents and a building. And she's like, I've never left Franklin before. And the sign says Franklin, population 17.
Mm-hmm. It's a small town, y'all.
You probably were never in a class with less than 17 people in it. I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Although they might not have counted women and children. And it was 1808. So like, 1908. Well, it's 19. Dude says later, it's like in like 2 months, it's going to be 1900, right? So it's technically in the film, it's 1899.
Going to party like it's 1899.
I'm just saying, like,
that whole comment about not counting women and children hurt me so bad. I think I tuned out the last minute. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It also means they didn't count any brown people.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
there's no people of color represented in this farming community.
They're at the doctor's office.
Like, we've talked a lot about race, guys, and you can go and listen to how rage-filled we were in our Night of the Living Dead episode.
Yeah. They're at the doctor's office, yeah. And Dorothy is talking about the book. She actually makes, I think, a few points, like about the Tin Woodsman with the axe cutting off his limbs. Like, I think in the original book, and I haven't read the book, so please correct me, but in the original book, it was the Tin Woodsman actually had an axe given to him by the witch, the Wicked Witch of the West.
It's kind of like that. So yeah. I have recently at least read up to that point, and he is an actual woodsman, so it's his axe, but he ends up, and he's a munchkin. He's an actual munchkin in the book, and he falls in love with somebody, and the witch, Wicked Witch, does not like that relationship, so she curses the axe. So he ends up, he's working out one day, and he cuts off a leg. And then he replaces that with a tin leg. And then he cuts off his other leg, and he cuts off all of his arms. And then he stabs himself in the chest. And I don't think he cuts off his head, but maybe he does. That sounds really hard to do. But he is, he's progressively changed into a tin man. And then he ends up, as it's in the movie, he freezes up. He
rusts.
He rusts. Yeah.
I will note, dear plotters, if you would like to reference a previous movie that we've reviewed, I know, I got throwbacks all over the place on this guy. You all have some too, I know. But we are now in a richly appointed doctor's office that looks like a study as a man with a beard smokes a shawarma pipe.
What would you call this doctor, Naomi?
I'd call him Dr. Douchebag, and that is an Earth Girls Are Easy reference. But the richly appointed office with the I forgot the name of the type of pipe. I reference it in that movie, this movie that I'm about to reference. When we did Joe versus the Volcano.
Oh, yeah.
Dude is smoking a pipe in a richly appointed, mm-hmm. now you're where people know what's going on type office.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
This is Nickel Williamson. He played Merlin in the Excalibur movie of the 80s.
And then he goes over and he's like, oh, Dorothy, this is all very interesting. He pretty much like cuts her off as she's talking about it.
There was a tiger in there, too, wasn't there?
It was a cowardly lion.
Okay, well, what about those ruby slippers you were talking about?
Well, I lost them.
When we were flying back.
And he's like, well, we're going to get rid of these, you know, delusions you have. And he walks over to this machine and he takes off the front of the machine. And
like adults not being able to explain to children drives me crazy because children are people. It's not that hard.
Right. And like it's very obvious with how articulate she is that there has to be some level of understanding that, you know, he could probably go ahead and, you know, talk to her, maybe not like she's a full adult, but like she's on her way to being an adult. Because it sounds like she's gone through some stuff, y'all.
Yeah, he
could really just say, we're just going to throw you in the pit of despair and throw some electrodes on your head.
I've just sucked 1 year of your life away.
Because he does go over to a machine.
Right, and now he infantizes her.
Infantilize.
He infantilizes her. He's like, look at this. And he takes the faceplate off. And he's like, look at these two eyes. And this, well, this must be his nose. And what is this, his mouth? And what could this be? And she's like, I don't know what the f*** you're talking about. He's like, it's his tongue. And then he's like, what we're going to do is we're going to like put these things on your head. We're going to zap you. She's like, here's how smart she is. She's like, is it going to hurt? And this is where my notes say, cue adults lying to children.
Mm-hmm. Because even if there's no electricity in there, he's still like, oh, we're in the age of electricity.
It's science. It can't hurt as much as if I put this drill in your head.
Turn on a light and then turn it off again. That's electricity.
The brain's just an electrical machine.
I'm just adding electricity to electricity. You'd put more water in a bucket, wouldn't you?
Your brain just has too many electrodes and we're going to draw them out with this thing.
So she's like, her face looks like this is some bullshit. And she's like staring into the glass of the machine. And that's when we first glimpse a little blue-eyed, blonde-haired girl who does not look at all like her reflection. Who doesn't look like Dorothy's reflection.
Right.
I'm sure she looks like her own reflection.
And we see this woman come through, or no, I think it then cuts to them being in the front of the facility, because then Dorothy's like hand in hand with this trunchbull looking lady.
Yeah, this Nurse Ratched type, like, mm-hmm. grabs onto her hand, and we pan up to Aunt Em's face, who's wearing a really cute green hat that is straw, and reminds me a bit of something that Sophie would have made in our last book, our last movie. Please feel free to reference Howl's Moving Castle if you want to. And okay, so remember when we left the farmhouse, Henry's like, get back before dark. Dorothy says we will. Now they're leaving Dorothy at the facility, which means, I mean, second time we've heard a lie from an adult to a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You're staying here. I will be back for you in the morning.
Right.
And Dorothy is like, what now?
This is Nurse Wilson, by the way. Nurse Wilson is played by Jean Marsh. You might recognize her as Queen Bevmorda in Willow.
Willow. No, not that one. That's the one I always think it is. It's the blood drinking queen one.
Yeah. She's like terror incarnate from my childhood.
No.
Yeah.
We don't know if Aunt Em was, but it felt like it.
Right. And then Aunt Em just is like, oh, here's your lunch pail in case you get hungry. And that's she what won't... Nurse Ratched says.
You won't be needing that. We have excellent meals here.
She's very cold and unfeeling.
Well, then you see Aunt Em riding away. Mm-hmm. And then Nurse Ratched, that's not her name. What's her name?
Jean Marsh.
Nurse Wilson.
Nurse Wilson's marching her down the hallway very forcefully, rips the lunch pail out of her hand, and is just like, you won't be needing this. Leads her to her room, opens the door, shoves her in, knows the child is there because of insomnia,
mm-hmm.
says, you can take a nap if you wish, and we'll be back for you when it's time for the procedure.
Cold and unfeeling medical staff.
It's like if I went in for anorexia treatment and they're like, here, you have to stay here. You can have a snack while you wait and I'll be back for therapy. Like, honey, that's rude.
Read the notes on the medical thing.
How about
the clipboard?
Read the room. She's exhausted. Look how big her eyeballs are. Oh, no. Oh, and did you notice how dusty the room was?
Mm-hmm.
This is a medical facility. There's a full court announcing. I know I keep referencing our house cleaning together, but like, it's a medical facility and there's a full quarter inch of dust on everything in there.
Mm-hmm. So Dorothy's in the room by herself. She's just sort of like, well, I guess I'm here. And I kind of get the feeling like, you know.
I just read my notes. Hold on. I'm
sorry.
No. I just have to, because if I don't say this out loud, it will live in this notebook and die in a chest somewhere. Why is the room so dusty? It's a hospital, my notes say, and go on to say, I mean, wipe it down with 1899 hepatitis water. Nothing's clean in 1899. Hepatitis water. Okay, sorry.
Okay. So Dorothy's in the room by herself, and she's, you know, I kind of get the feeling like she's like a few hours away from the procedure.
Yeah.
And she's like just sitting there waiting.
Turns towards the window.
Mm-hmm.
Turns away from the window. Ghost girl with a pumpkin.
Yeah. And it's again, the little girl that we see the reflection of in the face of the machine.
Here, I brought this for you. It's almost Halloween.
It's a pumpkin.
A little carved pumpkin. Very classic. Eyes, nose, mouth.
This little unnamed girl is played by Emma Ridley, but her voice is actually the daughter of the director, Walter Murch.
Well, they pan away. I think there was a noise or something, and she has to go. Dorothy looks away. She looks back. Girl's gone.
Mm-hmm. And that's when we see the anxiety waiting. I read my notes while you guys were talking.
Yeah? Anxiety waiting?
Well, it's like she's just waiting for this procedure, and so there's all of this kind of like, it's very quiet. We just have this very still shot on Dorothy, and you kind of like hear the weather coming from the background, and there's just the one light and everything, but it's very still, and it's already kind of like there's still a little bit of atmosphere that's been building up.
Yeah, it's about to storm outside, and you can feel it.
Right, and then you just hear, and it's silent. Until you start hearing, in the very distance, something squeaking, like maybe some wheels.
One point, though, she sets the pumpkin head, the carved pumpkin, the jack-o'-lantern, if you will, on the desktop of her slanty mirror desk, and she pulls out a comb and pretends to comb its hair.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was a super cute detail.
That was cute.
Yeah. Oh, 1899. All I can do is comb my pumpkin's hair to pass the time.
There wasn't TikTok back then, Naomi.
I would watch TikTok the whole time. She sits on the bed and just kind of like crosses her hands and she's just like staring. Like, just like, what am I supposed to do? I've already combed all my pumpkin's hair.
Oh, and then that's when it's all quiet. And then you hear in the far distance the squeaking of wheels.
Oh, yeah. And there's also a moment where she
I'm still jumping ahead.
No. It's just because I keep glancing at my notes. I'm being like, oh, that was an interesting detail. Oh, that was an realize that in her cabin, they had the hurricane lamp and like candles and daylight and stuff. But the room gets dark after the girl leaves. And so she goes over and pushes the button and turns on the electric light. And I realize that's probably her first time with electric lights.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just amazed.
Yeah.
And I do think at one point she glances out into the hallway, but nothing comes of it.
Oh, it's after the girl leaves. She opens up the door to see where she may have gone.
All she saw was Nurse
Wilson.
Nurse Wilson walking down the hallway.
Yeah.
Away from her. Okay, but now it feels like midnight and the door opens and there's Nurse Wilson and she's just like...
Actually, but like that's where after she like probably combs, after she opens up the door, mm-hmm. she goes and she like combs the pumpkin head. She turns on the light and all those little things. But there's this moment where it is very like the camera's just very still on Dorothy mm-hmm. and it's very quiet. And we hear this. Do you remember hearing the squeaking of wheels?
No, but it probably exists. The soundscape for this film is complicated. And I think that anybody listening to it, watching the film would pick up on different things, mm-hmm. especially as they relate to you. I'm much more like jarred by visual things oftentimes.
Okay.
So while I can appreciate the audio landscape of a film, like when the door opens and there's the nurse and she's like, would you like to go for a ride?
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to be jovial, but it's still that infantilizing effect that people in the medical industry oftentimes put on children,
mm-hmm.
especially if they don't work with a lot of children. They're like, you want to go for a ride? She's like, I'm 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, I do want to go for a ride, but also...
Right. And Nurse Wilson kind of like has a couple of orderlies. They have a bed.
It's like midnight, guys. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? It's dark out.
And they put Dorothy on the bed and they're like, no, you need to lay down so we can strap you into the bed. And she's like, I'd like to go ahead and sit up, please. And they're like, no, didn't your aunt tell you something before she left?
She said to do whatever you and the doctor said.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they strap her down and they wheeled her into this other room where the doctor is and this machine with a face is.
Yeah, so now there's like four orderlies bustling around. She's strapped down. The doctor hands Nurse Wilson this pair of headphone-looking things. And they do everything but stick something in her mouth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's like a pair of... They're not headphones. They're like... They look like headphones, but instead of the cushiony ends, they're uh-huh. actually metal ends. And he like tests it out a little bit.
Does he?
Yeah, and you hear the crackling of... I hear the crackling of electricity.
I missed that. That's terrible.
Yeah. And then, like, it's still, like, tensions building. It's very creepy.
Yeah, the nurse is holding him, and she looks a little bit nervous. And, mm-hmm. and we've heard people in pain throughout the past couple scenes.
Yeah. Halls are filled with some random person screaming.
Yeah, and, like, and so now, like, all of these gears and knobs and switches and stuff are going on. And she's also in a lit-up room in a way that must feel very stark if you're used to, like, candlelight and stuff. And even though it's not, it probably felt very sterile to her. She's in like her own gown too, by the way, which is just out of my wheelhouse in terms of like medical procedures. Like everybody's in a dressing gown in my world. So like she's in her little proper dress with bows and stuff. And then like the countdown begins. I'm like, not an official 10-9-8, right? But like it's pretty close to that. Like you feel like it's like and ready. And you see his hand on the switch that's like says start up on it or something like that.
They have the headphones on her.
She's never worn headphones, guys. You mm-hmm. might be wearing headphones right now as you listen to this. You might have something with surround sound where Lydia's coming from that way and I'm coming from over here and Jen's over like there in the middle somewhere. All right. But like she's never had something on her head like this. She's never been strapped to a table before. She's never been like surrounded by intense medical adults. And she's all alone. She must have been terrified.
Right.
And you feel it. And his hand's on the switch. And then there's a flash of lightning.
And everything goes dark.
All the adults are like, oh, shit.
Yeah. And they go ahead and they're like, he's like, oh, well, I'm going to go ahead and check on this sort of thing.
Oh, but all of the screaming starts up right then, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All of a sudden, like all of the buzzing and noise is gone. And all of a sudden, like from below them right. comes up. And this is where my notes say, this is a Disney film.
Yeah. And so they're like, the lights are all off in the place. They got to go check things out. And they leave Dorothy strapped to this table, connected to these electrode headphone thingies.
All alone.
My note says, leaving child tied down, attached to electricity? Nah, brah.
Nah, brah. You can throw one out there and say, nah, brah.
Nah, brah.
Nah, brah.
Nah, brah.
Sorry.
That sounds like me after I get home from work. I'm like, nah, yeah. Brah.
We promise you'll be perfectly safe. We just need to trip the breaker.
We're going to turn it off and turn it on again. We're just going to leave these electrodes on your head as we leave the room and the miner completely unattended.
The right. Pit of despair.
You can't turn it all the way to 99.
How does this make you feel? I've just sucked 1 year of your life away.
We should really do Princess Bride at some point. Okay. So.
And then that's when the little girl, the blonde little girl from earlier, who we've seen like twice already, she shows up and she's like unbuckling. She's like, oh, we got to get out of here. They have people in the basement.
They're the damaged ones. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I'm like, ew, what language?
And then my next note was like, yes, flee, escape with your new friend into the creepy woods.
Well, they hide behind aprons first.
Oh, that's right.
Then they run down the staircase where Nurse Wilson is just like, you guys pointed it out because here's what I'm trying to do. And this is for a point I want to make much later on. Does Nurse Wilson acknowledge both of them or just the one?
It's hard to really say. Like, there's a lot of moments where you're like, oh, this could very easily be in Dorothy's mind.
So the nurse only says, so.
Yeah, she doesn't say you or Dorothy.
So they escape out the building and run into the rainy, lightningy night. And they run into the tree line not too far from the property, like 300-400 yards from the building, right?
Right.
They run into the woods, rain, lightning. They're tripping. They're falling. Nurse, she's the only one who gets out there. She follows them into the woods screaming like, get back here.
Yeah, they get down to this river that's just raging.
They slip on the hillside. The nurse catches up and is like, stop. And they're like, ah! And they get all the way to the edge of this river that is now raging.
The little blonde girl ends up falling into the river and Dorothy's trying to like get her out. But then Nurse Wilson is coming in and then Dorothy's just like, I'm going to just jump in.
She straight jumps into the river.
Right. And there's all this debris going down because this is a big old storm, and the little girl gets onto a door, and then Dorothy, or it's just like this plank of wood.
Well, the nurse jumps in the river too.
Oh yeah,
but she just kind of sits down.
She's trying to get after them.
Yeah, but they start floating away.
Mm-hmm. And then the little blonde girl gets onto a plank of wood, and Dorothy tries to get onto the plank of wood, and then it goes under.
Yeah, and then it flips. And so then it turns out it's not a plank of wood. It's actually a crate.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
So then we don't see the blonde girl anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's when I shout out to my friend Tamara. I'm like, that baby dead, though. You can put that on half speed if you'd like. There's a whole story about it. I'll tell you sometime.
I think you did in like, was that on our episode about Pet Sematary?
That is entirely possible, but it's a reference to our first Batman Returns episode.
You did tell me about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, I think that if a child falls into a river, odds are they're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that's just facts.
Yeah. So it was a crib, right?
Well, it was a crate from cotton company or something like that.
Yeah.
It was, my belief is, from what it looks visually like, is that blonde girl gets on it, pulls Dorothy towards her. The thing goes under. We don't see blonde girl. Thing flips over. Dorothy's still hanging on. And now it's got four sides with spaced slats and a solid bottom. And she manages to like yeet one of the slats off of it.
And then yeet herself inside.
Well, she pushes two of them aside and crawls inside. And immediately her insomnia is solved. And that's all you really need to do to cure insomnia, guys. Throw a kid into the river.
In the middle of a storm.
They wouldn't have had to borrow money from Aunt Garnet.
And so
that's who they borrowed the money from to get the procedure done.
Yeah.
Aunt Em says it earlier. She's family. It's not charity. It's Aunt Garnet.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Lots of names with metals and rocks.
Gems.
And gems in this.
Yeah?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
No, there's just emeralds and rubies and garnets and whatever.
We are all Dorothy's gems. We've come to save the day because the Gnome King is a prick and Mombi's not okay.
That's what we've been doing all day, guys. It's great.
So Dorothy reaches out her hand and says, Wilson!
No, she just unconsciously floats down the river.
It's better than getting your head knocked upside your head, which is what Dorothy has happened to her on her first trip to Oz.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
She just passing out in a crate that looks like it might be floating down to a random ocean in the middle of Kansas.
Well, yeah.
I mean, maybe it's just me, but it looks like she's in the middle of an ocean.
That's the impression, totally. Mm-hmm. We've now come upon her. They pan across the slats of the crate, From the side. Right? There's water noises. There's sunshine. There's water. There's a now perfectly dry, perfectly clean little girl, for she has been cleaned by the river.
Yes.
She's perfectly dry because that's the thing about movies is they'll get a character super muddy and then they'll throw them in a body of water and then their outfit's just clean.
Yeah. And there's also a chicken in there. Chicken,
yeah,
in the crate.
Chicken noises.
Yeah. And is it at this point that when Dorothy starts talking to the chicken, who is Belina?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Belina starts talking back.
They spent half the day or three quarters of the day driving out to this doctor's office. She floats downriver. We don't know if the farm is up or down the river from this place. I'm sure somebody's got the math on that, but we don't. Not in the context of this movie. But now the chicken from the farm that they were well away from is like sitting on the edge of the crate.
And the water starts to recede a little bit, and Belina says, oh, looks like the pond's going away.
Dorothy is nonplussed by the fact that her chicken talks now. She's just like, oh, Belina.
But then it turns out that they are in the middle of a pond. But the water in this pond is receding so quickly that eventually it's just them in the crate, and there is no water, and they are surrounded by what looks like a desert.
Well, yeah. Belina says, oh, we're in a puddle. By the way, applauders. This Belina impression is my best impression of all time. Well, we're just in a giant pond. And then Dorothy's like, no, it's a... She stands up and they're in a pond. And she's like, huh. And then the pond shrinks and is gone. And she's like, oh, we're not in a ocean, lake, river, or pond. We're in the deadly desert. Belina's like, I'm going to go get some breakfast.
Which is totally a Northeastern accent, not a Kansas accent.
You think this is a Northeastern accent?
It sounds like,
I can't believe it.
Breakfast at Tiffany's.
I've never watched Breakfast at Tiffany's. For having a movie podcast.
Audrey Hepburn?
It sounds like one of the Hepburns for sure.
So. Okay, here's the thing. I've watched like Vacation in Rome or whatever but like, if you're telling me that Audrey Hepburn's like, why, I'm a leading lady. You're like, I'm going to whisk you off your... I want to have breakfast at Tiffany's.
I haven't laid an egg in over a year.
I was thinking, Jed, that you were going to bring up Pet Sematary again. I was like, the eggs of a chicken's heart are stony.
Sometimes the eggs come back. Belina is voiced by Denise Breyer, who also... We've made a reference to this before, actually last episode, but she does the voice of the junk lady in The Labyrinth.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I love that fact. I love it when a movie we do accidentally has another callback. Okay. So can I, at this moment, when they'll cut from a real chicken to a puppet chicken. And if you're like a little fastidious, you might notice the difference between the two. Mm-hmm. As a kid, did not notice the difference between the two.
Right.
The animation on this animatronic chicken, this chicken puppet, is amazing.
Agreed.
What?
Down to the blinking.
Yes, the eyelids are perfect. The mouth shape, like the kind of cocked, that's not for chickens, but you know what I mean? Like
the bob of the head?
Yes, and like the jerky motions that a chicken does and like the sudden pullbacks and like, you know, because they're a prey animal, like the side to side that they have to do to get perspective in front of them, like all of it's there.
I don't think that they had Jim Henson's Creature Shop on here, but knowing that Brian Henson was involved with the production, I bet he had some friends come along.
Yeah, there's definitely like a level of skill as we go through these creatures, as we encounter them. Like this is our first real creature in that it's a chicken that is talking and right. We watch talk. Like this is our first toe, our first pinky toe into the river that's about to sweep us away.
Right. But I like all of the effects in this movie, in my opinion, hold up, even if it's like, I think this is like a 30-year-old movie, right? 35, yeah. So this is over 30 years old and the effects still hold up, not just with the chicken, but also with the rock, which puts me into my next point, because as they're walking across these rocks, there's this claymation. Well, actually, I think it's animated. They like animate the rocks.
I'm going to agree with you on animation on this one.
But then later on, you do see some claymation that I'm just like, that is really well done.
Like, just, I mean, it's the era where you would have thrown away a ton of your budget on it, and they were not wrong to do so.
This is Evil Dead 2 final scene level of quality of animation.
Right.
Better. It's better. It's better. And as a person who loves Evil Dead, the entire series, and has watched Ash versus the Evil Dead series all the way through, cover to cover, love me some Bruce Campbell, and Sam Raimi, Tenderated Me, all of that, like, super into it, The animation, although maybe as heartfelt, it's better in this film. They just had more money to throw at it, and they had more skilled laborers. And that's not on Sam. That's just on Disney.
We say they had more money to throw at this, but really.
They lost money.
They didn't make money on this, but they threw it in the right direction.
5 weeks into production, Disney calls up the director and says, we don't want this. And George Lucas had to step in and say, if he doesn't direct it, I will direct it for you if you're not happy with his final product. And they didn't get George Lucas. They did get Walter Murch to finish the production of the movie. So, but I bet you that they would have made their money back if they had the billing of George Lucas on this.
You're absolutely right. Here's where we're at. We're standing in a crate in an empty puddle in the middle of the desert. And Dorothy exposits that this is the deadly desert. And she knows it because they flew over it when they flew back from Oz. Dorothy, at this point of the movie, has so much extraneous knowledge of Oz that, like, it feels like she spent 6 months there as opposed to, like, 3 days there 6 months ago. And now she's back with all of this, like, super knowledge.
Right.
With the deadly desert. She's like, I'm going to get, Lena's like, I'm going to get some breakfast. No, if you touch the sand, you'll die. You'll turn into sand.
Right. Any living thing that touches it turns to sand.
But if we stay on these rocks, it'll all be okay. So she picks up the chicken and with skill that I do not have, hops, skips, and jumps all the way over to a grass field not far away.
Right. And she comes across a tree that has all of these lunch pails hanging from the tree. And she's like, oh, it's a lunch pail tree. This is so good.
And littered throughout these next few scenes, there's a rock glaring at her like all the time.
Right. And she's like, one for now and one for later. And she plucks lunch pails from the tree. And she actually goes and she opens up one of them. And she's
it's got this cute pulp in it. Like, it's got everything nestled in there. It's a well-thought-out visual. If you cut out some pod from some beautifully exotic tree somewhere, except mm-hmm. it happens to be a lunch pail.
Yeah. And then as she's, like, eating lunch and everything, that's when...
It's a ham sandwich.
It's a ham sandwich.
Belina says, well, I'm glad it's not fried chicken.
But as they're eating lunch, you see the rock face that's been stalking them goes ahead and appears in a darkened area. And he's like, oh, sir, Dorothy Gale has come back to Oz. And then you hear this voiceover. You don't see the voice. Mm-hmm. It's very much like the doctor from Inspector Gadget. Dr. Claw.
Like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't see him, but you know he's there because of the deep, dark voice.
I used to do a Dr. Claw impression back when I was... I loved Inspector Gadget as a kid. I wanted to be Penny. I am not in any way Penny, but I can do it.
Dr. Claw sounds like this.
Nice.
Thank you very much. yeah. Please send your Dr. Claw impressions to shockedandaplot @gmail.com because I want to hear them all. I have dubbed this rock wall face talking to this disembodied voice. I've dubbed him the rock wall snitch.
Because he also tells the guy in charge that, oh, she also has a chicken. Or here's the thing. Like, his face looks like a the work on this face. It looks all animated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's very like detailed. You get a lot of expression
in
there.
It could very well have been
a face.
It could have very well have been a claymation face. Mm-hmm. They could have gotten away with it in a regular artistic animation style. We don't know.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Right.
100%. And it's all flat and smushy and like toothy and craggy. And he looks very much like broken granite.
Right.
Even though he's got a lot of expression.
And he expresses like he says, oh, Dorothy Gale's back in town. And
oh,
then he looks he looks down a little bit and you could just see the expression of this rock snitch, like looking a little bit concerned. Like, do I also mention something else?
You probably should.
And then the guy's like, what else is there? And he's like, she brought a chicken.
A chicken. I'll get you next time.
Good job. That's really good. I like that. Thank you. At this point of my first watching, I was like, I completely forget who the antagonist of this film is. Like, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Then Dorothy, like, comes over and finds her house.
Mm-hmm.
And she sees the yellow brick road, and it is just busted.
Totally wrecked.
Like one of those sandworms from Dune just went right underneath it. Just busted it all up.
Well, then we cut back. I mean, we get a lot of the rock wall snitch at this point, so that it cuts back to him, right? Mm-hmm. And he's all like, oh, they found their old house.
She's using the yellow brick road to go back to Oz.
Right, or the Emerald City.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but she's already in Oz. But that's nitpicking.
Right.
Emerald City's where it's at. The king is like, oh, Mombi will take care of her. And I'm like, at this point, I'm like, Mombi? Because I'm like sitting there staring at the screen and I'm like, Mombi? Okay, he's a zombie fan. Please reference our Living Dead episode. But like, Mombi is what you call a mom who is so mommed out that she's a zombie. A Mombi is an actual thing that people use in culture. And I was like, Mombi. Mombi. All my notes are like, what the f***?
There is this one point when Dorothy's pointing out to Belina what the bricks are, that she sounds...
It's just a yellow brick.
Right. And then, but Dorothy sounds a lot like, she sounds a lot like Judy Garland, the way that she says it. It's almost got this, that sort of high at the end of the sentences where it's like...
She got the same lilt.
You don't understand.
The delivery, you're saying.
The delivery is very good. She's very, you can tell that she's sad.
Okay, so Dorothy books it down the road. Hilariously, the chicken falters after her. It's like, wait up, wait up.
I thought it was great that she didn't trip on any of those bricks.
She doesn't fall down a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think. Okay, so they run for just a little bit of ways. Thank God the plot progresses quickly. They come to a crest just outside the forest edge where they see the wrecked Emerald City on the edge of the trees. And now they make it into the city. And everybody's turned to stone. There's a writing on the wall that says, beware of wheelers. And Dorothy's like, beware of wheelers? And then this is when Jen made a Walking Dead reference. And I can't remember what it is, but I noted it in my notes. And that was several days ago now. And I don't remember what it was.
Beware. The end is incredibly f***ing nigh.
That's the 28 Days Later reference.
Yeah, that's probably what I said, though.
Or if it had been a Walking Dead reference, it would have been like, don't open dead inside.
I'm pretty sure I made a 28 Days Later reference.
Then why did I write Jen's Walking Dead reference?
Because you would remember what that meant.
But I didn't, obviously. Okay, sorry. Sorry, Lydia. That was a conversation we had a while ago.
That's okay.
Beware the wheelers. Oh, and then Belina says, all this way to see a bunch of stiffs.
Yeah, and because everybody, all of the citizens in the city are stone. And they're walking through, they're exploring things, and the two get separated a little bit, and then Belina goes ahead.
And Dorothy's like, oh, shit.
And so she comes around, and as she turns the corner, she sees the Tin Woodsman with his axe raised.
But he's already made it into stone.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to be scared.
And so she goes, oh, and so she's like, you know, mourning her friend. And then she also sees the Cowardly Lion.
She hugs the statue. It's very decrepit looking. It's kind of sad. And this is where my notes, because I don't remember anything from when I was little. I was like, Scarecrow?
Yeah. But there's also a shot of these women dancing, or these statues of women dancing in a circle, and all of their heads are off. And like, as a kid, I was like, okay, now I know that this is terrifying and I should not be watching this, but nobody's stopping me, so I'm just gonna hide underneath my blanket.
Right. And Dorothy says, beware of wheelers. And then like at least two shots later, you see something behind a pillar like squeal away. That sounds, I have to say, the wheelers don't grease their wheels and they sound a bit like a gurney.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Right.
The wheelers are... this is where I'm not saying... The wheelers are the stuff of nightmares.
They are. There are these people who are on... They have wheels for hands and feet, and that's how they get around, so they're, like, quadrupedal.
Yeah, they've got, like, coattails on and, like, suits, but they're helmet/head parts. So when they've got their head down wheeling forward, they've got this fake, scary face. And then when they look up, they've got this highly painted, pale... like crazy face.
Mm-hmm.
They shriek all the time, their wheels squeak all the time, and they speak English.
Yeah, and their coats are like very colorful. The beginning of this movie is very like drab. It's trying to like kind of call back to the black and white,
the
sepia of the original film. But right now we get into that color, but the color isn't just all happy and fun like with the lunch pails. The color is also very there's this danger in the color.
Yes. My notes say, gotta appreciate them coattails, though. In appreciation, I mean, like, we're going to say it again and again, and we already started to, but we're going to carry on doing so. Aesthetically, this movie has so much going for it. And
right.
Like the original theatrical material, they use color in a way that just punches you in the gut again and again.
Right.
And the wheelers are terrifying.
It has this sort of sense of blended colors, whereas a lot of the original film's colors were... very stark, like they would go from a very brilliant green to, you know, something else, like a very blue sky. Like it was very definitive where the colors ended. And especially with the wheelers, it's almost like a tie dye, like all of the colors mix into each other. So it kind of feels more dark.
In the first film, the source material, they have the sepia tone scenes. And some people didn't know that it was a color film. So they came into it and they're like, oh, okay, beautiful song. I get it. And then they open up on Oz and you're just intentionally, in the same way that in Willy Wonka, when you first go into the room where you eat everything, that is like my own personal dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a transportative moment. And whereas she's shown up in Oz and it's been broken, now she's entering this evil overtaken Oz, and it's all been very bland. Even the yellow bricks were dulled when they were broken and set a tumble. But now she's in the Emerald City, and everything is like, now everything's stone. Everything is grown over and distressed and oxidized, and it's a very pale palette. But the Wheelers show up, and you're like, oh, somebody found some hot pink eyeliner, and now it's getting real.
Right.
Now the danger is present. It's not just avoiding the deadly desert and not noticing evil rock faces. Now this squeaking, screeching, I'm coming for you thing is here.
Yeah, the film does a lot with tension and building of tension mm-hmm. so well, like so much better than even like adult horror films today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they kind of like corner her into, or they go around, they chase her, and then they eventually corner her down this long tunnel. And she's like trying to find a way out, but it looks like it's a dead end and everything. And my note here, because it happens at least like one other time, is kids, this is why you don't play with your food. Because they're just like toying with her instead of just going in there. And they could have probably gotten this taken care of if they just, you know, didn't play around.
Yeah, they start stalking her down this hallway. And that gives her time to realize that she has a key. There's a keyhole in the wall. She turns the key. She gets behind the door and shuts it. And they're like, oh, the door!
The key that that Belina found on mm-hmm. the farm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're yelling at each other between the door. And they're like, you're going to have to come out of there sometime. And we're going to peel the skin from you, or something equally terrible.
The lead Wheeler that's talking to her, the actor's name is Pons Marr, and he does a lot of physical work. So he was in a couple of the dinosaur suits for the TV show Dinosaurs. And he also did the voice of the Noid. Remember the Noid?
Avoid the Noid. That's what I did.
The Domino's mascot?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's some 90s stuff.
Another thing that's kind of freaky weird about the Wheelers, besides the squeaking of the wheels and the costumes that are just brilliantly scary, is also the group laugh thing that they do.
Oh, like the hyenas in Lion King.
Yeah, very much like that.
Yeah.
I think at one point there's like a chirping at one of them. There's one Wheeler that's up high, and then you see like the main one down low, and then he goes, ah, ah, or something like that.
You feel very much that they're on the fine line between humanoid and animal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could be capable of anything. Although they only have human mouths, and tearing things apart is hard.
Right.
They're like the raptors of this movie.
All right.
And so Dorothy is stuck in this...
They mentioned the Gnome King to her.
Oh, yeah.
This is where we learn the name of our antagonist.
The main Wheeler says that they're going to get her because she broke the law. And she's like, I didn't break the law. And he's like, isn't that a lunch pail in your hand?
A stolen lunch pail? And don't you have a chicken with you?
The Gnome King outlaws chickens. Something like that.
Illegal chicken, the name of our band. This isn't actually a song or me playing off of anything, but I think we should have a band called Illegal Chickens. Okay. She, again, as the person she is, has decided to deal with the situation the best she can. She turns around and walks away from the people who, oh, by the way, they leave the hallway. They're like, we're going to get you when you're forced to come out of there. And they leave the hallway. She turns around and is like, well, I guess I'll make do with what I got right now. And turns and sees a robot.
Thank you, Applauder, for returning to us for yet another fantastic episode of Shocked and Applaud. We've got a few more bricks to lay down to reach the end of our episode. And introduce you to our new segment, Shock Talk, at the end of the month. Looking for more to listen to before we come back? I Drink Your Podcast is another group of best friends that review movies, specifically concentrating on the year 2007, including Ratatouille and Good Luck Chuck. And Listen to the Film is a podcast that examines a soundtrack for its influence on a film. You can find links to these podcasts in our episode notes. Hey, this is your audio engineer and wizard of the sound waves, Jen. Did you know that listening to our back catalog of episodes helps lift us up in many of the popular podcast networks? If you haven't checked out some of our older episodes, our two most popular are our reviews of Monty Python and the Holy Grail and Pet Sematary. We're 1 week away from part two of our review of 1985's Return to Oz, and we hope we'll find you coming back for even more magic. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.